Welcome to The Pin Down, a Detroit Pistons podcast. I am your host, Wes Davenport from Motor City Hoops and Detroit Bad Boys. And as always, I'm joined by my stellar co-host, DBB's draft expert, Blake Silverman. Blake, how are you feeling after tonight's game?
You know, it's been a rough couple nights in Pistons land, but at least they showed something in the second half against the Pelicans. But overall, rough couple days.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are recording here after the Pistons lost to the Pelicans on a second night of a back-to-back. Kind of came out and they struggled in this one. Seemed a little bit flat on the, you know, kind of an emotional night the night before, losing to the Blazers, giving up that big lead. And then, you know, like I said, they did come out flat tonight. They did seem to pick it up there in the second half. But, you know, just overall, we've had quite a few games since we've last talked some Pistons hoops. So wanted to hit on the rookies, you know, Sasser, Asar Thompson. Both of those guys have been looking pretty strong. Even against the Pelicans, Marcus Sasser was the first guard off the bench. That's right, not Jaden Ivey, not Alec Burks, who was injured, you know, to be fair. But he was the first guy to come in and sub for Killian Hayes there. So, you know, Blake, what were your takeaways here on the both rookies, Asar Thompson and Marcus Sasser, through these few games?
Yeah, I'm going to start with Sasser just because I thought how Monty used him tonight against the Pelicans was pretty interesting. Bringing him off the bench, the first guy off the bench, I think at about the 7.5 minute mark in the first quarter, getting Killian Hayes and getting Sasser some minutes with the rest of the first group. I thought that was sort of a test look ahead to see if Sasser would work in the starting group in place of Hayes. I think he definitely could. Personally, I would give Alec Burks the nod over Sasser and maybe even Jaden Ivey as well. But I think Sasser has played well enough to definitely have a say in that case if there was going to be a change. And then with Asar, like the past couple of nights, he's played great, don't get me wrong, but I'm really just waiting for him to make a three. Like watching him against the Pelicans, really the defense just not even checking him on the perimeter, letting him have whatever shot he wanted. To his credit, he took those shots. A few of them were short by a lot. So I'm hoping he bounced back. Like, we should keep in mind this is only his sixth NBA game, and he's impacted the game a ton in everything besides shooting. So I'm hopeful, but yeah, I just want to see the shots fall for Asar.
Absolutely. And, you know, to be fair, with Asar's jump shot, I mean, I've been someone that's been a little bit more critical of his jumper through the draft process coming into the season. But, you know, the Pelicans were sitting back in kind of an aggressive, extended 2-3 zone, right, for most of that stretch where he was just airballing threes. And what they were doing was, like you said, just leaving him. No one was closing out to him. They were actually splitting out to both ends of him to go close out on the opposite side to deny passing lanes. So, honestly, I wasn't too worried about all these misses that happened versus the Pelicans, because this was just kind of a rookie being faced with something he hasn't faced before, right? He's not seen this happen to him before. And what he needed to do was drive to the hoop, right? He needed to penetrate that zone defense, make things collapse around him, make a play out of it. He's a good passer. He's a pretty good finisher, though, you know, not as much in the half court, but he's been growing in that area. So, you know, that's just a rookie that doesn't know what to do yet. And that's why he took so many threes. So that one doesn't worry me too much. And you're right. You know, he's been really impacting the game on both ends of the floor without shooting the basketball. He's probably been the best cutter on this team so far through the six games that he's played this season. And that's already, you know, like I said, as a rookie, to be a really good cutter, you've got to have a really good feel for the game. You know, rookie's not necessarily known for having a high feel, right? So this is all positive stuff for Asar Thompson, I've thought. And not to mention, right, he's been the best perimeter defender on the roster. That cannot be understated. He's been incredibly valuable in that space for the Pistons so far. And, you know, I agree with you on Sasser coming in that early, because it was only a few minutes into the game. I think it might have been 3 or 4 minutes into the first quarter that he gets the sub for Killian Hayes. And there was a good extended chunk of time where it was pretty much the usual starters But instead of Killian, it was Marcus Sasser. And, you know, I mean, the first quarter was more or less competitive. It was really the second quarter when the Pelicans blew up the lead, got up by, I think, 25 at one point. Yeah, you know, with Marcus Sasser, I think the best thing about him so far is that he's the only guard on this Pistons roster where you could look at, and he can do all three things that you really want out of a guard. He can dribble the ball, he can shoot, and then he can play defense. The Pistons have guys that can do one or two of those three things, but not really all three. So the fact that he can do all three, I mean, I do think if you're going to make a lineup change, I think he might be the best middle ground, right? Alec Burks can shoot and he can handle the ball, but he can't really play defense. Jaden Ivey, as good as he's played the past few nights, he's still getting burned quite a bit on defense. And I think he only played 19 or 20 minutes against the Pelicans. So you have to think at this point, this is a message being sent to him that he's going to need to defend. So he's probably not going to get the call up. So of the guards on this roster, I think potentially the best fit right now next to Cade Cunningham might actually be another rookie in Marcus Sasser, which is not something I really anticipated saying this early on in the season.
Yeah, it is interesting. Like with Sasser coming in, I sort of wondered where he was going to fit in this rotation. And I think with Monte Morris, like slated to come back from injury, we know Burks is out. Like what, like I think Sasser is playing himself into more minutes, and if he proves himself to be that guard that complements the starting group, like I think he's going to make it really hard to not carve out a decent workload for himself. I wasn't expecting that to happen this quickly, but it's definitely great to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what did he score against the Pelicans? 18 points, right? 18 or 20?
19, like, 19
he's
points.
Making Alec Burks.
Yeah.
19?
19 points, oh 5 of 19. 8 from 3.
Yeah, exactly. And he's doing all this on, I mean, he's not just efficient from 3, he's efficient for pretty much everywhere. He's making Alec Burks look fairly expendable. Like, I don't think that when Monte Morris gets healthy, that it's Monte Morris that might not play. I'm pretty confident that he's going to get minutes. This Pistons team really needs kind of a calming set of hands at the guard position. Cade's obviously been prone to some turnovers. Killian Hayes has been better about not turning the ball over a lot, but then he's been shooting 20% from the floor and taking a, you know, 7 shots. So that's almost 7 turnovers. It's not Monte Morris that's not going to play basketball. They need him in this rotation. So it's pretty much going to come down to Sasser or Burks. And if Marcus Sasser's going to keep playing like he did these past 2 games against the Blazers and the Pelicans, it's going to be really hard to sit him. And, you know, he has been doing this in Alec Burks' absence, right? This is the NBA. Sometimes when a guy gets hurt, he misses some time, someone else steps up and maybe doesn't give that spot back. And very slowly but surely, I think we may be heading towards that becoming reality. He's just been playing that well.
Yeah. It's just so hard for me to see right now with, especially the way, I mean, we saw some life in the second half in New Orleans, but just like the dreariness that we went through at points with this offense and without Alec Burks on the floor, like I just think when he's healthy, they have to find minutes for him, certainly in a different role than Sasser. But like you're saying, what if we're carving out more minutes from someone, like where else are they going to come from? I just think sometimes, like when the shots aren't going down, like we need someone like Alec Burks. So right now I think it's a little bit tough for me just to see Sasser completely like, or just like diminishing where Burks is in the rotation. But like you said, Sasser's play could definitely make someone like that more expendable moving forward.
Before we jump into some questions here, let's talk about Cade Cunningham. He's kind of had an up and down couple of nights. First half against the Blazers, he played incredible basketball. He was efficient. He was aggressive. He was in control. Second half, not so much. The Pistons team in general had a lot of turnover issues. All right. And this wasn't just Cade Cunningham. that was turning the ball over a lot in the second half against the Blazers. It was everybody. Everyone was turning the ball over, and everybody was fouling. Okay, so again, this wasn't just Cade. It was a team-wide issue. But that was what was going on in the second half versus the Blazers. Come in against the Pelicans, and you know, it didn't start amazing. It didn't start terrible. It was kind of, for as good of his stat line that he put up, it seemed kind of like an average performance out of Cade against the Pelicans. Am I wrong for thinking that, or what were your feelings on his past couple of games?
I mean, I think speaking first with New Orleans, the first half, like, he got into foul trouble, and I think two of his three first half fouls were certainly questionable calls. So I think tonight it was just a little bit tough for him to get going. We saw him get going a little bit in the second half. It just took longer for that to happen. I think he might have only played like 10 minutes in the first half. But like you said, as the game moved forward, like in the fourth, you could see him forcing some shots a little bit. And yeah, I mean, he took more of an effort, I guess, to be a facilitator and try to get his teammates going tonight. And I think that might have been a product of himself getting into early foul trouble and not feeling it early. I mean, the turnovers, I think, are definitely a concern. I think you also have to think about when you have a defense who's leaving like Ausar Thompson and Killian Hayes open on the perimeter and like redirecting that attention towards Cade, like turnovers are going to happen. But that said, like, your lead guard and number one option definitely has to just not put together six or seven turnovers a game. So I think it's just growing pains. Like, it's a six game back. I mean, I'm definitely concerned about the turnovers, but I don't think it's as crucial as maybe it comes off of, because there's some other things that are impacting it as well.
Yeah. No, I'm entirely in agreement with you on these turnovers. I don't think it's as big of an issue as it you know, feels like as a fan when we're watching these games, because I'm fairly certain that the game against the Pelicans was his 82nd game in the NBA. I think by numbers, he just finished his first season. It's really easy to forget that he played, what, 11 games last season, and this is effectively his second year as a full-time NBA point guard. Because, again, we need to remember his rookie year, he played a lot of minutes next to Corey Joseph. So I know they're playing him next to Killian Hayes right now, but when you watch this offense, everything is going through Cade Cunningham. His usage rate is through the roof. He's being asked to do a lot, and he's a young guard in what is effectively his second year in the NBA. You're going to have a lot of turnovers. That's just kind of part of this process. And a lot of really good young guards have gone through this. Not everyone's Chris Paul, where they're just taking care of the ball, you know, since they were probably in middle school. This is just going to happen. So this is part of the growing pains, part of the rust. What you want to see, I think, is it improve a little bit as we go through the season. Because, you know, I will point out that a lot of these turnovers, maybe not a lot, but, you know, maybe call it a third of these turnovers, look kind of lazy. You know, he had one skip pass against the Pelicans where he's out on the opposite wing. He tried to cross the court to get it to, I forget who was on the opposite wing, but just an overhead skip pass, kind of a blooper. It was lazy. I think Herb Jones jumped it before he'd even finished the passing motion. It was just obvious where that ball was going. He does little things like that quite a bit, and those are the controllable ones. So I think as he continues to progress, right, as he continues to grow as a player, you're going to see those go away a little bit. But, you know, by and large, I'm right there with you. This is a young guard in his second season of NBA basketball. He's going to turn the ball over quite a bit. I think that's why Monte Morris is so important. That's a guy that's got an incredible assist-to-turnover ratio. So when Cade Cunningham does get on these streaks where he's just loose with the ball and guys are pressuring him, you can turn to a guy like that. That'll kind of settle the ship a little bit. So, you know, I am really looking forward to Monte Morris coming back, just for this reason alone, just a steady hand who can also shoot. Like, I think that's going to be an incredible help to Cade Cunningham right now.
Yeah, and it, just so you know, I looked it up on the side, and tonight was Cade's 82nd game in the NBA. So you're spot on with that, and congrats to Cade Cunningham for finally playing a full season at NBA basketball. But yeah, with the turnovers and sort of just like what's going on in the fourth quarters or second halves, like, I'm wondering if it's him getting a little gassed or maybe just like frustrated at the whistle he's getting throughout the night. Cause I mean, at least tonight there were definitely some questionable calls against him. Not trying to make like a ton of excuses for him, because he's definitely made some like careless turnovers and some lackadaisical passes, like you said, but it does seem like there's something a bit more going on there, as well as how opposing defenses are treating his bandmates. So hopefully it's just something he adjusts to, and it's just something that can whittle down little by little over time.
Absolutely. And I think it will. I think you're right. Really quickly, I want to hit on the fouls, all right? Because I think this is a team-wide issue. And I was explaining this to someone earlier tonight over text that, like, the Pistons, they're a team of a bunch of guys under 24 years old. So they're already losing the respect battle, all right, in the eyes of these referees. You've got a bunch of young kids going up against some solid veterans that have been around and have a rapport with these officials. You're already going to lose a slightly lower amount, or you're going to lose more than you're going to win on these 50-50 calls. But when you combine that with a team that has only two guys that consistently and aggressively attack the rim, searching for contact, in Asar Thompson, who's a rookie, right? So he's not going to get a lot of these calls in game number 6. And Jaden Ivey, who's getting about 20 minutes off the bench, you're not setting yourself up well for getting any 50-50 calls as the game progresses, right? I mean, you see this a lot with Killian Hayes. He gets fouled a decent amount when he drives to the rim, but he's already falling away from the hoop when he's going up for his shot. He's not going to get that call. Cade Cunningham falls into the same sort of bucket. He does it quite a bit. He's not contact adverse, but once he gets his shoulder into the guy, he's trying to separate out and away instead of going through and just taking the whistle knowing that it's going to come. So I don't know. Like, there's no switch that you can flip here. It's not an easy fix to get this team to get to the line more and get these young guys to get a better whistle. But if there's some way that all of them could attack the rim like Asar Thompson does, or like Jaden Ivey does, well, then all of them are going to get more calls than they're going to get now, because you kind of set that tone. And to back me up, watch the second half when the Pistons started playing better against the Pelicans. They started playing more physical on both ends of the floor. They started getting up on guys on defense and really attacking and driving hard to the rim, and they got a lot more calls. So, you know, it's not just, we're Detroit versus everyone. They're not going to get a good whistle. Like, there's reasons they're not getting these 50-50 calls, and it's not just, throw your hands up. It's a really tough fix, and I don't know how they're going to change it without changing some mentalities, which is not easy to do.
Yeah, and it felt to me, at least watching the game in New Orleans tonight, like, especially that I think it was in the second quarter when Cade got a couple quick calls on him right in a row and had to get subbed out. And it just felt like there were just so many whistles that were only going against the Pistons just for a long period of time. And it felt like that way for a while. And then I had to look it up because there was a free throw discrepancy, but it wasn't as large as I thought it would be. The Pelicans shot 35 free throws tonight compared to the Pistons 26. So like you said, I don't know. I think, like we talked about last week, to me, Cade is the guy that you want driving to the rim and trying to, not necessarily trying, but just getting most of those foul calls. Like we discussed last week, like just the way he plays with his pace and the little jab step he does, like maybe that doesn't always lend itself to immediately drawing a ton of contact that's obvious. So hopefully it's something that will come. But I don't know. Tonight, the foul disparity wasn't as bad as it was against Portland.
Yeah, absolutely. And last thing I'm going to say on it is, look, from my playing experience, when you come out against a team as like off the tip and they're more physical than you are, literally from the jump, you're not going to get a lot of calls. And it's really frustrating because you get fouled a lot. And it is, once you've set that precedent, right, that you're the team that's getting kind of pushed instead of the team that pushes, it's really tough to change the ref's framing on how they're seeing things. And it's really frustrating. So anyway, let's get on to some questions. Enough talking about the refs.
Can I just mention it really quick? Jalen Duren getting ejected at the end of the game was wild. But that's it. There was like 8 seconds left, so it didn't matter.
That was wild.
Hopefully he doesn't get fined.
That was wild. I don't know how he could. that was wild. That was unexpected. And I've got no answer for that one. So no excuses. Let's jump into some questions here, Blake. This is from, I think, Truia. I hope I said that right. From DBB in the comments, asking, what are the real indicators of progress versus fool's gold, noise, or hot smoke? When and how do we define those things for the Pistons in this highly combustible landscape of the NBA?
Ooh, that's just like a deep question, I feel like. But to me, it really just is about consistency, which, I mean, is an indicator that we're looking at over time. So I don't know if that's the correct answer to this question, but like, we're talking about the turnovers with Cade. Like, he had, sorry, I want to make sure I get this right. He had 6 turnovers tonight against New Orleans and 6 last night against Portland. So I want to see him consistently drop that to like 75%, 50%, whatever it might be, just like to show improvement there. So I can say, all right, Cade, even though he still might be turning the ball over more than we want him to, at least he's showing improvement there, and just doing it consistently. And I mean, really goes for anyone. If we're talking about Asar's 3-point shooting and shot making, like, same thing there, just struggling a little bit at the start, but it's just hopefully you find those things, like see one shot to fall and then just keep seeing that over and over and just see improvement little by little. And then I think you can build something that has longevity. And I hope I answered that question in the right way.
Yeah, I think you did. And I'm going to back you up because I think it's consistency as well. You know, like, any young guy in the league is probably going to have a moment or two. I mean, Matt Ryan just scored 20 points against the Pistons and made, I don't know, 6 threes. It felt
How
like
did we go
miss.
This long without talking about Matt Ryan?
Ignorance is bliss. We just want to ignore it. Point is, a lot of guys are going to do that. This is the NBA. All these guys are extremely talented and basketball players. They're going to have a moment. They're going to do something big. But it's when a guy can start stacking those more often than not, right? When you consistently get a Marcus Sasser hitting 4 threes a game, right? If that starts to happen, or if you're Matt Ryan 7 every night, right? When these things start to happen consistently, over multiple games, and you stack them together, now it's real. Now you can bank on that. So I think that's kind of the indicator, right? If a guy has 1 or 2 really good games, it might just be noise. You know, they could have just gotten hot. It happens. These guys are extraordinarily talented players. But once they start having, you know, a 10-game stretch where they do it, or even 15 games, now you know you've got something. Now it's repeatable. And they can do it. So, you know, even if you want to look at this Pistons roster, Cade Cunningham, his rookie year after the All-Star break, when he really started to pick it up and just kind of make the all-around type plays that we've grown accustomed to seeing out of him, those started stacking after the All-Star break, not before it. He did struggle early on in that season, but he had flashes in there, you know, against early in the season against the Nets. I think he had Kevin Durant talking about how good he was going to be. And then the next few games, he struggled, right? But it was after the All-Star break that these started stacking. And that's when we knew, okay, we can kind of count on this moving forward. So, yeah, I think you're spot on. It's consistency. Otherwise, it's just something streaky.
Like Matt Ryan, 6 threes tonight.
six. Oh, my God. All right. Next question. We can't keep talking about Matt Ryan. We kind of touched on this a little bit, but this is our guy, Kyle Metz, friend of the show, asking, how concerned are you about Cade picking up these pointless fouls?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I was like frustrated for him with like the fouls that he was picking up tonight, especially the ones in the first half. There was one though that was in the, I think it was his only foul in the second half, where it was kind of just like careless. He was behind the guy he was supposed to be defending and didn't really try to like contest it. And I was just like I'm not sure if he was caught off guard there. Like maybe it was a frustration thing. I mean, I really hope it's not something that we consistently see, because of course, like, you don't want to be doing that. But I don't know. I'm giving him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt tonight, because I thought he did receive a few very like questionable whistles, which kind of like set him behind for the whole night. And he wasn't able to like get cooking like we've seen him do in other games in the past.
Yeah. You know, I don't think the fouls are that concerning. But there, every now and then, this has popped up this year. I think this game against the Pelicans, and then was it the Hornets game where he got in foul trouble as well? I can't remember which early season game it was. He kind of does these, I don't want to call them lazy fouls, but he doesn't make a business decision, I think would be a good way to put it. We actually saw it a couple times tonight against the Pelicans, where I think it was Dyson Daniels is underneath the hoop. He's wide open and Cade's behind him. Don't jump. Get out of the way. You know, you're the team's best player. They need you on the floor. You cannot pick up a ticky-tack cheap little foul like that. Get out of the way. He'll try to contest dunk or layup attempts from the weak side. Stop. Don't do that. You know, I like that he wants to make a team play, right? He wants to get a big block shot, all this stuff. But if it's not obvious that he's going to get it, I wish he would stop. I wish he'd step back and make the business decision, quote unquote, there, right? And then, you know, out on the perimeter too, he does get handsy. He does reach a little bit, hand checks a little bit. I think those are more, you know, not quite fundamental, but just repetition stuff. He's going to get over that. It's more of those little ticky-tack things down by the rim that do make me just a little bit nervous, because that's just processing, right? That's seeing what's happening in front of you and going, I can't help this right now, and I can only make it worse by picking up a foul. I'm going to step back and just let it go and maybe position for a rebound. So I wish he'd start doing that more.
Yeah, and like Christopher is saying here, like one thing that I thought as well is like he's looked super gassed. Like he did against Portland. He looked like he was losing steam a little bit, like toward in the fourth quarter tonight against New Orleans. So I think it's either a little bit of that, like, as well as maybe a little bit of frustration with like the calls he's getting, or like the lead being blown and against Portland. So I think there's something more to it other than just like being like making a lazy decision just because like that's what he's thinking of. I think there's something else going on there. And maybe when we do get Sasser in the starting lineup, Burks back from injury, Morris back from injury, Bowie on, and he has more shot making around him, maybe we'll see that go down a little bit as well.
I agree. And, you know, this isn't directly related, but something I have really liked from Monty Williams so far is the heavy minutes that he's been giving Cade. I think he played, what was it, close to 40 against the Blazers. He's getting high minutes that he really wasn't as a rookie. And as a rookie, a lot of us did notice that he was getting a little bit gassed near the end of games. So, you know, this is kind of Monty Williams saying, you're going to do it. And if you're not going to get yourself in enough shape to do it, then I'm going to play you into it. And I do like that. You know, if Cade's going to be this guy that most of us think he can be, he's going to need to be able to handle a 40-minute night here and there, even if usually he's only averaging, you know, 34, 35, 36, right? Like, he's going to have to do that, and he's going to have the conditioning to be successful when he does. So I've really liked the minute load that he's been getting, even though he did miss all of last season. There's been no ramp up. It was just go. You're in. Time to play. And I've loved that.
Right. And in New Orleans, he would have had, I think, 40 minutes if he didn't get in that first half foul trouble. He ended the game with over 33 minutes. And like I mentioned a bit earlier, I think he only played around 10 minutes in the first half. I think he got a blow at like the end of the third quarter. And other than that, pretty much played the entire second half. So, yeah, I'm totally with you there.
All right, so next question here from Charles Pick 59 in the DBB comments. He's asking, do the Pistons need a good defending veteran power forward? And he mentions old friend Paul Millsap from back in the day to just kind of complete this front court rotation for the team.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of who would be available to fit that role. And I'm assuming it would be someone that would come off the bench. I mean, I like the idea, just someone who is a strong defender that can be there in case Duren, Stu get into foul trouble and just be like another backup front court member alongside Bagley, who we all know is a much stronger offensive player than he is a defensive player. So I think it would definitely benefit the roster. I'm not sure who that person is, but I definitely think it would be a good thing.
I really want to see how Isaiah Livers fits into this whole situation before making any sort of decisions on the power forward and the big rotation on the whole. I kind of felt like he was probably slated for a good number of minutes here to open the year if he wasn't hurt. And that's kind of been the qualifier for his career so far, right? He has been a little bit prone to injury. He's missed a lot of time over these 3 years. But I think he'd be a pretty good fit. You know, he can defend really well. He can shoot it really well. Both of these are more theory than they are reality. But, you know, if when he gets healthy, he gets out there, I just think it could – there's a potential. There's potential that this could work, and he could be a very good backup power forward and kind of fill a hole as another good perimeter defender out on the wing that this rotation needs to back up Asar Thompson, honestly. So, you know, before they think about making a trade or trying to pull someone into that 15th spot, I think it would be smarter to just be patient and wait for Isaiah Livers to come back and give that a shot. Because I think it would address a few of the deficiencies we've been seeing out on the floor so far.
Yeah, I honestly, like, just with Burks going out the past couple days, and I haven't really thought of how Livers fits into the rotation, because I'm still trying to think of, okay, when Monty Morris is back, when Bojan's back, like, when Burks comes back, how do these guys fit in? And yeah, when Livers comes back, he definitely can help on the defensive end as well, which is, I think, what we're focusing on here, just making sure when our second unit comes in, we're not giving up a ton of points. So yeah, I'd be interested to see where he fits in as well. Like you said, I'm sure Monty Williams wants to find minutes for him somewhere. It's just about figuring out where those are and who you take them from.
I think, you know, so much of the offseason conversation after the draft and free agency was, you know, what's Monty Williams going to do with this rotation? How is it all going to look? And instead of getting an answer, we got a bunch of injuries to very key guys that we all expected to be in the rotation between Bojan Bogdanovic and Isaiah Livers. And then now, obviously, Burks is out as well with that forearm soreness. So there's so much that's still up for debate and up for grabs right now in this rotation. When everyone's healthy, I don't know how this is all going to shake out. It's going to be interesting for Monty Williams to see how he changes things. And honestly, you know, there are a few players like Sasser that have probably made this a tough choice for him as well. You know, like I'm sure Bojan was probably slated to start, but you know, do you really want to move Asar Thompson off the wing now, the way he's played on the defensive end of the ball so far? I don't know. You know, it's going to be tough. I don't know what they're going to do when Isaiah Livers gets back and Bojan gets back and Monte Morris. You know, do you have any gut feeling on it right now?
I have always sort of thought, which I'm going to, I think, stick with, is when Bojan is back, I just think it's as simple as taking out Killian Hayes and slotting in Bojan and shifting everyone down and playing big and seeing how it works. Like, it could not work very well, but I just think Bojan adds that spacing element and like the shooting that Cade needs around him, but still having like Asar in there as like the strong wing defender who can cut and just grab rebounds and make plays. I think it could work. I don't know if it will long term, but that's what I see is like, to me, the move to make. And I think now it's like Monty has ran with the same starting group for the entire season. Like, I think now is the point. If the point wasn't after the Portland loss, like, it's definitely now after this loss. Like, he should be trying new things. I always kind of assumed when he came in that he would try some different starting lineups and rotations just to see what sticks and what works. So I'm a little surprised we haven't seen changes so far. And now I think is like definitely the time to try new things.
I wonder if he's going to wait to like maybe 10 or 15 games. I remember Dwayne Casey in years past would talk about how he kind of has a set rotation that he cranks out during training camp and the preseason. And he leaves it there for, I think it was 15 or 20 games, if I'm remembering right. And then at that point of the season, now he's going to reevaluate and make some changes. I wonder if, you know, Monty Williams might be in a similar kind of boat. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, as poorly as you know, a guy like Killian Hayes has played so far this season, it really has only been six games. You know, maybe he's doing stuff in practice that we're just not seeing yet, and we need to give it some more time to show up out on the court. Maybe we do need to wait another four or another nine games before really making an overarching decision on the rotation. And, you know, as tough as that might be for the fan in me to accept, it might be the more calm and rational way to approach it. I can see the value in trying to take it slow and seeing what's real and what's not, right? I mean, we talked earlier about consistency. So how does this lineup consistently play? They've had some good games and some bad ones. So maybe we just need to wait and see how it all shakes out.
Yeah, it's been, I can't help but wonder what Monty Williams' ideal rotation was if Bojan was healthy, if Monte Morris was healthy. Like, I'm not convinced Killian Hayes would have been in that like 10-man rotation. And I understand why he put him in the starting group for these first five, six games and maybe wants to keep it that way, like you're saying. I just wonder if there's like an element in the back of his head that says like, this is not working. We need to try something new. And I do think that Jaden Ivey is purposely out of the starting group. Like, I don't think the decision is necessarily, okay, let's just slot Ivey in for Killian Hayes. I think it's maybe try a Burks in there, try Sasser in there, give Ivy more rotation minutes with the first unit. But yeah, I just can't help but wonder what the rotations would have looked like if we came into this season healthy.
I agree. And I do think we gotta shout it out. Our guy, Christopher Franks here brings it up. Killian played much better tonight. He did have a solid game. So there's that. But I want to ask you real quick, Aaron brought this up in the YouTube comments here, but do you have any concern with Bojan starting when he does get back, just based on the defensive side of the ball? You mentioned that I think he'd be the ideal guy to slip into the starting five. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just think what we're talking about with Killian Hayes, like the idea is like his effort on the defensive end, like sort of crosses out like maybe some stagnancy on the offensive side of the ball. I think it's the exact opposite with Bojan. And I just think like a guy who scores the way he can, who shoots the ball the way he can, like it's tough to put or keep a guy like that out of your starting five, especially when we know that this group, like we need to put shooters around Cade and really just give him some more space, some more time to work, some more threats to lure defenders away. Honestly, like I think Bojan would be a pretty strong starter on a lot of contending teams in this league. So I don't know. If I were the coach, I would just have a hard time keeping a guy like that on the bench.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I think the thing with Bojan that kind of gets missed a little bit on the defensive side is this, he does have one thing, and that's size. I mean, he's a pretty big wing. Not only is he pretty tall for a kind of combo forward, but he also is bulky. You know, he's heavy. He's hard to move. And if you can purposely put him in situations where that heft, that bulk is useful on the defensive end, he can approach average. You know, he can approach being neutral. We've seen it before, right? When he was with Utah, he was maybe not the best defender out there, but he was okay, you know, most nights. No one's going to write home about Bojan Bogdanovic's defense. But I think there are ways where you could get him to a spot where you don't necessarily notice that he's out there on the defensive end, instead of, you know, more of what we saw last season where you noticed it in a bad way. So, you know, I do think that I'm not all that worried about the defensive work that you can do with him out there with the starters, especially with what Isaiah Stewart has shown, being able to switch out onto wings like Jimmy Butler for some extended periods of time versus the Heat. You know, he's done this a few times this season, and it's honestly not looked that bad. So yeah, I feel like you can hide him a little bit and it wouldn't be awful. Real quick, let's move on to next question here from our guy Christopher Franks. Asks, does Ivy look any better on defense this year versus last year? Is Monty Williams doing the right thing, keeping him around 20 to 25 minutes per game?
Yeah, so a play he made against New Orleans tonight actually sticks out to me when he had that block on the three-point line. I forgot who was shooting the ball, but Ivy turned it into a quick like transition opportunity and got fouled. Like, I don't think that's a play he would have made last year. I don't think there's been a ton like of sample size for us to definitely say like he's definitely a better defender right now. Like, we definitely need more games to just be sure about that, but I think we've seen some flashes. I was a little confused in New Orleans about his minute distribution. I mean, I've been a little confused about it all season. I think Ivy was really the guy who sparked the third quarter run for the Pistons that sort of made things interesting in New Orleans. And I'd have to look, but I don't know if he played much, if at all, in the fourth quarter. So I just think it was a little strange. And maybe that is, he just has like a shorter lease leash on the defensive side, and we needed to get stops in the fourth quarter. So maybe that's what it was. But yeah, to answer the question, I think he's showing flashes, making strides. I thought going into the year, his minutes coming off the bench would be right around 25 to maybe a little more minutes per game, like seeing him as more of a sixth starter as opposed to just a bench player. I'm a little surprised it's been less than that, but hopefully his play like proves itself into a larger minute distribution.
Yeah, I agree. So the minutes confuse me. The defense does not. I think the thing with Ivy is more or less the same as it was last season. He'll show some interesting flashes on the ball. Like when he focuses, he can lock in and guard the ball pretty well, though that's not something consistent that he does. He'll flash it. But off the ball, you know, he gets backdoored quite a bit. He doesn't go through screens. He doesn't navigate well. He's just not a very aware off-ball defender, which really, you know, did limit him quite a bit as a rookie. And I think it's been better through the six games so far, but not significantly so. You know, he's still getting burnt quite a bit off the ball. And then now, because he is, you know, trying to pick up further up on the ball, right? I mean, there was a play he was guarding SGA against the Thunder out, you know, 40 feet away from the hoop. There's no reason. There's no reason to do that. And then he ends up getting blown by because he wasn't low enough and wasn't ready, basically. You know, he's been pressing guys, but he's not been ready to have them attack his press. His defense has been very much a mixed bag to me. So if all of this, you know, Jaden Ivey off the bench stuff is kind of a call to him to say, hey, be the defender that you can be. Okay, that's great. You know, I get it. I see it. At the same time, like you said, against the Pelicans, he really did ignite the comeback. When he was out on the floor there near the end of the third quarter, they went from, I believe, 22 down to, didn't it get down to 11 at one point, 11 or 10? Almost cut the deficit in half. He gets pulled during the break, and he doesn't play again in the fourth. And they really never cut the lead any closer. I just think he does give you quite a bit on offense to require a little bit more leash on defense. But that being said, you know, that's my opinion. I'm not an NBA coach, and I do see what Monty Williams is doing, because he is getting burned still quite a bit. I just don't get the 19 minutes thing.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at with it. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I'm in the same spot. Like when there was all the chatter about Ivy coming off the bench initially, like as we got closer to the season, like I just really thought it, like I didn't see it as a demotion. I really thought it was you're still going to get close to 30 minutes a game. You're going to be the first guy off the bench. You're going to have the ball in your hands more in the second unit. But we haven't seen that so far, which is why I'm confused and surprised at just like the amount of minutes he's gotten. Maybe Monty Williams wants him to prove himself a bit more on the defensive end of the ball. Like, I'm really not sure. It's one of the more like interesting storylines to me just with this team so far.
I agree. It feels like a call for Jaden Ivey to earn some minutes and earn the starting spot, which I understand and I get, and that can be pretty valuable, especially if he can, you know, successfully do it. But at the same time, you know, you're asking him to do something he's not great at. He wasn't great at it in Purdue. He was not a great defender when they drafted him. As much as they talked about him having all the physical tools, you know who else has all the physical tools is Asar Thompson. And, you know, there's some part of this that is just kind of mentality and awareness and processing speed. And in some of those capacities. You know, Jaden Ivey just maybe doesn't have it. You know, he my point is, I don't think Jaden Ivey needs to be a guy to take the best guard on the other team's roster and guard him for the entire length of the court all night to be a really, really good guard and worthy of that number five pick that they used on him, because he does have so much gift, you know, so many gifts on the offensive end. If they could just get him to neutral, I think that'd be a huge step up for him. And I think that's much more reachable than what I'm a little bit worried they're hoping to eke out of him as this process kind of goes on during the season.
Yeah, and I think there was a point in New Orleans where he was matched up against like Jordan Hawkins, who is just like a great off-ball mover, and like you were saying, like that's where Ivy struggles or just like leaves us wanting a little more. So I think like Hawkins was never the number one or even number two like scoring option for the Pelicans on the floor tonight, but if Ivy can just guard that like wing or number two option on the floor and just like hold his own, I don't know because we haven't seen it so far with the minutes distribution, but I think that will lead to more minutes, a larger role, and maybe more of what I was thinking of, just that true six man, six starter. But we'll see.
Yeah, I agree. And so let's transition here to the guy in front of Jaden Ivey, who is a little bit better of a defender there at the guard spot, Killian Hayes. DDoS from the DBB comment section is asking us, Killian Hayes has a horrible true shooting percentage. I think I saw it was at like 27 or something. It's really low. It's not good. At what point does the organization make a change?
Oof. I'm thinking we're talking about making a change in terms of like the starting lineup as opposed to like moving on from Hayes, which could happen soon as well. Honestly, I thought that after last night's loss, I thought there was a high probability there would be a change in the starting lineup, and if it was going to be anyone, to me it would be Killian Hayes after he was okay on the defensive end against Portland, but was 0 for shooting the ball and just like a negative on the offensive side. I, especially after the loss in New Orleans, I could see Monty switching it up soon. I don't really know what that switch will be just because he's surprised me with different rotational moves, but I don't know. I think it could come literally any game. Wes, like you said, maybe we're waiting for like the 10 to 15 game sample size to make any moves or just wait for some players to return back from injury. To me, like a move getting Killian out of the starting lineup is happening soon. But I don't know. I thought it could happen tonight and it didn't.
Yeah, I agree. I like Killian, all right. I really liked him in that draft. I've really wanted him to work out, and it's not so far. And there are two really important things kind of working against him, right? So on the one hand, on offense, I do think that in the NBA you can make it work with two non-shooters, but it makes it a lot harder for you to find success on offense. And what the Pistons are trotting out there right now is, at least as far as the defense is concerned, four non-shooters. Because as good as Isaiah Stewart's been shooting the ball through these first six games, they are not respecting him out on the three-point line. They're collapsing everyone really hard and making him prove that he's going to keep this, I think, 38, 40% clip up that he's been doing, that he's going to keep that up throughout the whole season. So he's not earned the respect yet. So functionally, what they're putting out there is four non-shooters. This goes all the way back to game one. Cade Cunningham has been getting trapped and pressed and pushed for, you know, 40 feet away from the hoop every time he starts to get downhill. And that is not accidental. That's because no defense respects the other four players that are out on the floor from distance. So the spacing's just not really good. And that's making it really hard on Cade. It's making it really hard on everyone else on the floor at the same time. So that's not great. As well, on offense, you know, you saw this against the Blazers. I think it was in the third quarter. There was a possession where Killian drove to the hoop while keeping his dribble alive this entire possession three separate times. And not a single Trailblazers defender even turned to address his drive. Everyone stayed up on help in their denied position out on the wings. No one even thought that he might shoot it. That's a big problem. So he's not just not good on offense. So far, he's been really bad on offense. And I hate piling on the guy, but you go look on the other end of the floor where he's supposed to be a really good defender. And he's been getting burned a lot off the dribble this season. A lot. That wasn't something that's happened too much in the past. But this season, I don't know if he's just playing up too high or if this is, you know, kind of a function of them icing a lot of these screens so far. But he's been getting taken to the rim quite a bit. He's not been a really positive on the defensive side of the ball. And that's the whole reason he's out there. So, you know, long story short, it makes me feel bad because I've been rooting for him so hard for about 4 years now. But it's just not been coming together for him. It's not looked good through these first six games. And, you know, this is year four for Killian Hayes. This is year four. He looks basically the same as he did in years two and three through these first six games. So, you know, clock's ticking. I just don't know if it's going to come. And I think they do need to make a move here in the starting lineup. At least get a guy out there like Burks, or if Bojan can get healthy, or even Monte Morris when he's healthy. Like, get someone out there that can shoot at least. And that's going to fix a lot of problems, honestly.
Yeah.
So there's my soapbox.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't see Hayes getting totally, like, removed from the rotation. I just think there has to be a move in the starting lineup. But also, yeah, like, it, everyone knows, like, it hasn't been good. It's a glaring hole. But also, he had a decent game tonight in New Orleans. So shout out to Killian a little bit.
Yeah, he did. He did play better. He did. And he's flashed it. But yeah. Yeah. Like, we do need to point out that he did play well, because I was piled on there and it was only mostly deserved. He did play well. He really did. And he was part of that third quarter comeback, too. He made a couple of threes. I think he had a nice little ISO drive to his left to get to the middle of the key, step back shot that he hit, and he kind of got fouled on, but didn't get called because he was fading. He had a nice second half for sure. All right. One or two questions left here before we get out of here late after the game. This is from Davenport Arch, which I can only assume is my father. So thank you, Dad, for posting this on the DBB comments. When Bojan and Morris are available, how do you think the lineup will change? Will Sasser still get some minutes?
Yeah. I mean, I think the starting group, like I said before, like, to me, I just have to try Cade, Bojan, Asar, Stu, and Duren. Like, I know it's not like the functional or I guess like proper lineup. I just have to see if it works, because like Bojan adds the spacing, Asar makes plays on the offensive end, also is just like the crazy wing defender. Like, yeah, no one's gonna check him when he's like pulling up on the three-point line. So I just want to see how that works. So say it does work, I guess my second unit in that would be Morris, Sasser, Bagley, Ivy. I need to like map this out more, and like Joe Harris. But I don't know. Like, I think Monty Williams has said it's going to be a 10-man rotation. I just think like the dynamics of how some of these players, oh yeah, Burks, thank you, Aaron, who was a glaring omission from my rotation. But yeah, that even like proves how like Sasser has played coming out of the gate. I don't think you can totally just like remove him from the rotation. So even if we do want to stick to a 10-man rotation, I think there needs to be a little bit more flexibility here when we do get some of those guys back from injury, just to like try different things, see who plays well off each other and see what sticks.
I think I'm going to take a little different path on this one. And I honestly, for the starting five, I think I'd do it, you know, the next game, and I would do it when Bojan and Morris are still healthy. I think I'd just start Sasser next to Cade Cunningham. You know, he's not the biggest guy, so there are going to be some matchups where you absolutely cannot stick him on a two. Like, you know, when you're playing the Bulls, he's not a guy that should guard Zach LaVine. As tenacious of a defender as he is, Zach LaVine can jump out of the gym, and he's got a good, let's call it 4 inches, which might be generous to Sasser, of height on him. So that's not a good matchup for him. So you're going to have to figure out something there. Maybe you stick a SAR on him and try to have Stewart guard a guy like DeRozan or something to that effect. But generally, the best combination of defense, which Monty Williams has talked at length about really wanting from his starting group, and shooting in the guard room, is Marcus Sasser. So I think I would keep the starting lineup pretty much the same and then substitute Killian for Sasser. And then when everyone's healthy, I think it would be a lot of fun to have a bench unit of Monte Morris, Jaden Ivey, Alec Burks, Bojan Bogdanovic, and Marvin Bagley. That's a lot of veteran presence to surround a young guard with, and a lot of space to give to Jaden Ivey to just kind of go nuts. And I think he would. I think you'd see him play really well. Now, I will say Monty Williams has staggered a lot of these lineups. We've not seen a ton of minutes where it's been the whole five bench unit. That was something that we saw a lot with Dwayne Casey. We've not seen it a lot with Monty Williams. So with all of these, you know, starting five backup kind of rotation splits, it's good to keep in mind that the bench isn't going to play a lot on their own. Usually things are going to get staggered. So even with that being said, I think those are probably your 10 best guys, more or less, to stick out there. And I do like that starting five grouping, even though it is ridiculously young. This would be year two in a row of starting two rookies most of the season, if that's how it goes through, which would make me a little uncomfortable, but that's how I do it. I think that's the best middle ground.
Yeah, it's a hard conversation to me because, like, I think, and this, I'm thinking back to last week when we were all having fun watching this team, and it wasn't the quickest, like, change of vibes, by the way, in like a season I've ever seen. But like, we won a couple games just because we were deeper than Charlotte. Like, Chicago really only had like Zach LaVine doing anything. I think it's hard to think back on a time where the Pistons won games because they were just straight up like deeper than some teams. And I think that's why it makes like the rotation conversation so hard, because a guy like Sasser, that before the season, I wasn't sure he was going to make like a traditional 10-man rotation or have any minutes at all. Like, he's definitely played himself into it at the very minimum, like a solid rotation spot. So it's interesting, especially when everyone gets back.
Yeah, agreed. All right. Last one here before we get out. Kind of a quick hitter. So how sustainable do you think the defensive play is? This is from Rames in the DBB comment section.
Sorry, I'm just reading through the question. Oh, man. So I think back to like the first sequence of the opener where it was just like Asar and Duren, like, blocking everything. Like, I think if we learn one thing after watching the game against Portland is, I mean, how key like Jalen Duren is to this, like making this whole thing work. And also like just Asar, the type of plays he makes, his athleticism. I don't know, like it's tough to say how sustainable like a positive net rating is just because of some of just like the dreadful offensive lulls that our team has went through. So I think like it's going somewhere, and we're definitely focusing on defense as it is with a starting group with Asar Thompson, Isaiah Stewart, Jalen Duren, and even Killian Hayes for that matter. So I think it's getting somewhere, and especially just with the play that we've seen from Asar Thompson on the defensive end of the floor. Like that's what makes me think it can be sustainable. I don't know if it's all the way there yet, but in the long haul, I think he's, I guess, like the most intriguing piece in making that happen and making Detroit have one of like the top defenses in the league.
Yeah, I agree. And I've also been really impressed with Jalen Duren to open up this season on the defensive end. That was something, you know, I thought he struggled with as a rookie. And so far he's been honestly very good as a weak side rim protector. I've been quite impressed with the leap that he seems to have taken from that. So, you know, sustainable is an interesting word. That's the key, right? Because you're looking at a team, you know, we've talked about it. They're really young. They've got a lot of, you know, 24 and unders playing significant rotation minutes, and you're asking them to play consistently great defense through the course of the season. And I don't really think that that's something that they can do. I don't think that's really something that's even fair to ask them to do. And I think we've already seen it, right, between these first six games where, you know, there have been entire games where it's been great. There have been entire games where it's been bad. And then there have been some up and down ones where we've had really good first halves and maybe not so great second halves, or maybe a quarter here or there that's really not looked great. So I kind of expect this to be a roller coaster this year on defense. But that being said, I do think it'll be more positive than negative. You know, they do have guys like Duren, who's looked like he's taken a step, and Asar Thompson, who day one in the NBA has already shown to be an effective and positive wing defender. So, you know, I don't think it's going to be a night-to-night sustainable sort of thing. I think it will be up and down. But I think more often than not, they have the potential to be a pretty good defensive team. And that's pretty exciting compared to where, you know, these guys all were, you know, a year or 2 years ago. So, you know, I think it'll be better. I don't think it'll be perfect, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think just with all the focus that we've heard from Troy Weaver and now Monty on the defensive side of the ball, like we have to get towards being just like a good defense. Like we've seen flashes of it. Like you said, sustainable is a tough word right now, just because we haven't really seen much sustainable with this team. But I think if there's one thing that we know that the Pistons are focusing on in the long haul is just being strong defensively. So, all right, we're going to call it there. Wes, do you have any final thoughts before we sign off?
You know, I'm just happy that Pistons basketball's back. I think the roller coaster we've been on through these first 2 weeks is a heck of a lot better than that time in, I think, August when just nothing was going on. I will take this any day of the week. I love watching them. And I love that they've won a few games. They've been exciting. I don't think we're going to ask for much more. So, you know what? Let's just be happy that Pistons basketball's back. That's my message. That's what I want to get out to everyone. This has been great. I've loved it.
You are preaching there. It has already been such a roller coaster. It's been exciting. It's been disappointing. Unfortunately, it's not getting any easier for the Pistons as they have a home back-to-back against the Phoenix Suns and Golden State Warriors coming up this weekend, but we will be back next.
Real quick.
Yeah.
real quick, ridiculous. One, how many back to backs they've already had this season, and two, that they had a back to back in the preseason. My God, what's going
I
on?
didn't know that that was like a thing that could happen. I was like, the Pistons have a back to back in the preseason, and it was a road back to back. Like, it's ridiculous. But yeah, the scheduling gods.
And like 4 days before the actual season started.
Yeah,
like
it's.
What?
It's insane. One day the scheduling gods will be kind to us. But all right, thanks everyone for joining on YouTube, and if you're listening to us on the audio version wherever you listen to your podcast, we'll be back next week on Thursday to record the next episode of the Pin Down. Special thank you to Sean Corp, the managing editor of Detroit Bad Boys, for supporting the show. And of course, shout out to all of you again for the great questions and talking points. We'll catch you next week, whether on the commute or live with us here on YouTube. We can't wait to talk more Detroit basketball with you.